PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our sixth episode of Off Course on the THP Radio Network. I am Rob, aka Rob Miller Time, out there on social. You can, of course, follow Off Course at Off Course THP on both Twitter and Instagram. And with me, as always, is the great Dan Edwards. How you doing, Dan?
I'm good, buddy. We're smiling today, which is great. I don't want to spoil what's upcoming with our delightful podcast with our good friend Adam over at Golf Unfiltered. But the fact that we are cordial today is a testament to our patience to both each other and this wonderful game that we share in golf.
Yeah, we just recorded about an hour last night with Golf Unfiltered, and that I was afraid we wouldn't find enough like energy for today's recording, but that's not the case. We're raring to go. We got three, possibly four topics that I think we all have an opinion on.
Yeah, we've got some good ones. I don't think it's going to be as,
off course.
As off course, I don't know, because all of these, you can go into 100 different tangents. I don't know if I'm really curious to find out if our listeners have a true passion one way or the other. I think some of the topics we've talked about in the past have had like a real teeth gritting aspect to them. So I'll be really curious to hear the feedback on this, especially in the THP community forums, whether these things irk people the way they irk me, which is more than they should.
Yeah, and so everyone out there, you can follow us as well and join the conversation. We always post the podcast on thehackersparadise.com. Click on forums and you'll go in there and you'll see us. So join the conversation and also follow other podcasts that are on the Hackers Paradise Radio Network, Range Days, which Dan is part of, giving you some in-depth equipment thing in partnership with Club Champion. And of course, our buddy Golf Unfiltered, who you're guaranteed to hear those Chicago sirens outside as well. Maybe you'll, things happen in Chicago when he records that podcast, doesn't he?
Yeah, I still don't know what his plan was last night, whether his goal is to break us up or make us stronger, but I think we're doing good. So
it was a lot of fun. So be sure to click the subscribe button on wherever you're listening this to or from, I should say.
So Rob, I have at my course, it sounds like you have gotten the go-ahead to do foursomes now instead of twosomes.
Correct.
I would imagine as a twosome going off every 16 minutes, you dictate the speed of your round.
Yeah, you really don't have any pressure either way. You've got plenty of time to play that hole.
So at our course here in Ohio, we have 12-minute increments, which is still great. And they're doing that for a number of reasons, not just to space people out, but also because as riders, you can only go as singles right now unless you live in the same household. So they simply don't have a large enough fleet to cover four carts per foursome for all 18 holes, whatever that range is.
Completely understandable.
Which, yeah, I mean, it's interesting, but our course has always had, during the high traffic times like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they've always had a rule in place that you must cart before 2 p.m. And a big reason of that was pace of play. And it starts to create this interesting debate because we are playing, we played in 3 hours and 30 minutes the other day and we were waiting on shots. And I was like, I'm afraid of what it feels like coming out of this pandemic when we actually go back to playing in four and a half hours. How am I going to manage that mentally? Because we were playing such fast golf right now.
Yeah, that's a quick round.
Yeah. But this whole lead in is there's this big myth out there that walkers cannot play anywhere near as fast as riders. I want to know how you feel about that and whether your perception is impacted by local play.
Well, I think walkers can play just as fast. I mean, obviously it depends on fitness of the walkers as well. I mean, if they're, you know, there are some walkers that probably shouldn't. But at my course, for example, there are these guys that play the front nine all the time and then they drop off. They're in their 80s. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, there's one guy is 92 and he plays, but they let you through, you know, type of thing. Those aren't the people that we're really talking about. I think that if you're a walker, you should absolutely be able to play fast. It really, I think the speed goes a little bit along with your, is mostly dictated by your skill level, right? That's the way it works, because I've seen these things out there and I've gotten into these things on Twitter where people say that everybody should be able to get through a round in 3.5 hours. I think that's completely just, that's pie in the sky kind of stuff. There's no way. You've got to be a damn good golfer to play in 3.5 hours, especially for the entire foursome. You've got to be with some similar people.
Are we talking walking, riding, or regardless?
I think regardless. I don't, you know, there are other people on the course, so that you can only play so fast without, like, the scenario you're saying, 3.5. That's past the pace of play. You know, that's you're above and beyond the typical pace of play. I mean, what's your course? 4:15, do they say per nine?
I think we're at like 4:10, 4:20 right now as an expected pace of play for 18 holes.
And I think that is great. I don't think there's a problem with that. But, you know, sometimes you get there, you do have a foursome, or, you know, God forbid, a twosome that does interrupt the flow. It's just part of golf, unfortunately. Be glad you're not playing like Morris County, New Jersey municipal golf, because if you want to spend 6 hours at a golf course, I can guarantee you that's where to go. So that's one of the reasons why I said bye to that a while ago.
So they have plenty of local courses here who have the same troubles. You get onto high traffic weekend times, and you, especially in the afternoon, are looking at rounds that are well over 5 hours. Comfortably over 5 hours. Rob, I have to circle back, because this is a conversation that's been had in the THB community before, and oftentimes skill level does come into conversation. And what I think the best rebuttal to your comment was, some of these dudes who think just because they're a low index player, they feel the need, and I can actually take this two ways. They feel the need to play pro golf. And when I say pro golf, all we need to do is look at the pace of play on the tour to recognize that these guys are exceptional golfers, but they are playing as a threesome in time and a half that it takes for us to play as a foursome at my course. So where is that variance there between you must have skill and you must not Bryson your way around the golf course?
Yeah, that's true. I think that maybe that creeps into the weekend golfer when they're watching Bryson pace off a, you know, 3-footer for how many minutes? 3 minutes? 4 minutes? It's just, you know, looking at his greens book. I mean, it's maddening. Someone sent me a GIF of Keegan Bradley, like his pre-shot routine, pre-putt routine, and I tell you, you would think it was looping, but it wasn't. It was forever, man. It was like watching a never ending reels on a slot machine, just going. You're just waiting for him to stop, and it just never does.
You know, that nervous tick he's got, right?
Yeah, he just looks at it. He gives it, like, I don't know if it's the crook eye or the stink eye, something. Those things, we see those on a bit on TV, and I think it does creep into some golfers, but those guys are this stuff is for a lot of money. And don't forget FedEx Cup points. It's on their mind, right?
It's definitely on their minds. Of course it is. But then you have these guys who are, let's call it five handicaps, or, you know, scratch golfers playing for what typical buy-in at my place is $30 to $40 for a game. Then that 30 to 40 to them could mean just as much as some of these tournaments, especially these guys who are middle of the pack playing through the tour, not, you know, competing for the win. There's got to be there's got to be more than just skill involved. I think you have, and I've certainly played with a number of golfers who are exceptionally fast and don't play to an overly impressive handicap. Let's call it bogey golf, and they can still really make their way around the course. And I think a lot of that has to do with recognizing that when you're walking, especially, or even when you're riding with a partner, you have the ability to move forward and prep your shot before it's your turn. So, you know, you got those guys around the green who are staring at butterflies flying around until it's their turn. And then they walk to the other side of the ball. They check their line. They line up their putt. Huge pre-shot routine, make their putt or miss their putt, and then do the whole damn thing over again before we go to the next tee box. I don't know if we can use purely skill here. There has to be some sort of sensibility clause incorporated into this argument.
Well, you're trying to teach everyone kind of like common sense and also I guess, I don't know, the right word is empathy towards other golfers, you know, and keep the pace of play up. I mean, I've seen, like you said, there could be a great person's great skill, but on the greens, he might take forever because he's really expecting, hey, I'm going to make this 27 footer, you know, kind of thing. Or it could be a 3-footer that could drive you nuts. I had a friend I used to play with all the time. He hit a bad tee shot. He would take practice swings after, like 4.
Oh, while he's on the tee?
On the tee.
No.
Like, dude, you're killing me.
Oh, no.
I am so frustrated. That's like one of the worst things I could ever watch. Honestly, it's like, can you move? I'm just trying to tee off here, you know, kind of thing. And I think when those guys are around, it makes me play faster and want to play faster because I see it. But it's really hard to nudge that guy and get him out of his comfort zone, which is, you know, like you said, staring at butterflies.
I think you made a good point as being cognizant to your other golfers that I typically step up to the tee. The less I think about it, the better. So I do it more to save myself from making a bad decision within the 15 to 20 seconds it takes me to pull the trigger once I've started my pre-shot. But I don't know. I know guys who will start their warm up on the tee, take their practice swing, then turn around and have a conversation. And I'm sitting there going, bro, it's time to go hit your ball or I'm going to start walking.
Yeah. I have a friend like that. It's just like, there's a lot of conversation happening and it comes after you've already hit one. You're waiting for him. You know, it's like, hey, if we play fast, we could really get, you know, we could get out in front of everybody. And the conversation just keeps going and it's nothing golf related whatsoever.
So let's go back a little bit to the walkers versus riders debate. Because like I said, right now at my course, we're busting records for pace of play and it's not even being policed. It's just happening. And I didn't really realize it until last week. And again, we were playing as a threesome. So we were pushing a foursome and waiting on shots and we were in carts, which is fine. But they played in 3.5 and we didn't even realize it until we got finished. But my thought there was if all four of them are in carts and they're not waiting on anyone in front of them, and let's say these guys are normally comfortably in that 410 to 420 range, is it actually the riders that are slowing down the pace? Or have we looked at this the wrong way for forever? Is the fact that two guys in one cart adds an extra 45 minutes to a round? Because I know these guys aren't in any hurry to get home.
It has to add some time because it you know, certain holes, it's cart path only. There's a 90-degree rule, which is sometimes followed, right? It's not really religiously.
Yeah, on the first hole, maybe.
Yeah, and as soon as you're out of range, yeah, there you go. You're all over the place. And then two guys in a cart, there's conversation that happens. There's got to be a word for the awkwardness of when you're both on the opposite side of the cart and you're trying to reach for a club or put a club back. You have to decide like who goes over, who goes under.
This is not a date.
Yeah. The cart bag reach around. Yeah. It's really like golf awkwardness. But there's all kinds of things when, you know, the guy brings, hey, I got some cigars, you know, like, you want to do that? All right. So, all right. That stays lit for half a hole. And then I got to get the lighter back and this, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, you're definitely, it's almost like, it's like golf's version of a road trip when you put two guys in a cart, because you, there's all kinds of things that are, can be a distraction, especially when you hit a drive, you know, you don't play good cart golf. One's over there, one's over here. So it's not, I mean, does that speak to skill level? A little bit, but there's all, I can agree that if you have one guy in a cart and it's one person per cart, it's probably going to be a little bit faster as long as the cart rules allow them to go wherever they want.
So I'm going to put out an aggressive take here, and I hope we get some feedback, especially once we've posted this to both social and the THP community. I'm going to say that one person in a cart is the most efficient way to play golf. I'm going to say that one person pushing a cart, a walking cart, I'm going to say that they are the second fastest person playing golf. And I think two people in a cart are somewhere well after that. And I don't care how many variables involved. So again, attack me on social, or Rob's not going to admit how he feels. So just throw it at me at Canada and Golf on Twitter. Or I think we take this debate to the forum and see what they think as well, Rob.
I think, are we sponsored by Finn Scooters or something? Is that what you're lobbying for them to send you one or something for a
demo? It's a good segue. Is maybe the time, especially with what we were dealing with in the world right now, maybe the time the two-seater is coming to an end. Maybe golf scooters, golf bikes, golf whatever, where it individualizes someone's speed around the golf course, is the most efficient way to improve the pace of the game we love.
I bet you if we had Finn scooters, 60% of my club would die within four rounds. I know, well, the membership.
So yeah, I think we're pretty much settled on that one. I'm still shocked at the way you started in, but you know, I enjoyed the debate on the decision making versus skill. I think there is something to be said about both. But there is another really weird scenario that plays out. And most oftentimes it's in the evening or when the course is quite slow, maybe even in the off season. And I don't get the trend at all. And I'm a guy who carries every chance I get. I have a not particularly light bag from Vessel and Cobra that I love. It's got Arnold Palmer all over it. Amazing bag, incredible gift from, couple great teammates last year. Heavy is not a thing I'm particularly concerned with when I go and walk the course, but you have all these guys in this huge trend now of this Sunday bag. And I just don't get it, Rob. I really don't.
You don't want to have less tools at your disposal when you're out there on the course?
Yeah. I mean, that's a part of it. If I'm going to, and I have like so many problems with this. If I'm going to post my score, is it appropriate to play with less than 14 when I know normally I would, and especially in a tournament round, I'm going to play with 14?
Yeah. Why? I mean, I don't have experience with a Sunday bag because, like you, I'm not going, I don't understand the allure of it. Like, if you're going to play like the Preserve or something like a Abandon or something, that's fine, right? That makes sense to me. You wouldn't need a bunch of those clubs anyway. But to dedicate something to have what, I mean, what do you stuff in there? 9, 10, maybe something like that. Is it less?
I see guys go without driver. I see guys go without a couple of their longer irons, maybe gapping somewhere weird, leaving a wedge out.
Yeah, I have a friend that likes to carry, and he takes out a couple clubs. So he just deals with it. But I don't know, to be honest, when he puts those clubs back in the bag. And like, you pay for those clubs, shouldn't you? You know, you can bring them.
I'll tell you when he puts them back in the bag, when the score matters, right? Suddenly he's riding in a cart with all 14 at his disposal with a buffed up handicap because he's not normally playing with that many clubs.
Yeah, this, I don't know. This is kind of like a dotted line to last week's topic of playing with a putter, right? Shooting 84 with a putter. You know, what was your handicap in order to get into D flight and shoot 84 there? You know,
more than 19, so he says.
Yeah, by mucking it up.
So I'm gonna tell you right now, Rob, I'm gonna catch some heat for my dad because I know he does it. He goes typically just driverless, and I think he might leave one other club out. So it's not that bad. It's not like this 9 or 10 club deal. And most of the time he does it on the weeknights. But that's not even the weirdest thing for me. Have you seen some of the bags they're making now for this whole Sunday bag concept?
Oh yeah, all bets are off. First of all, they can be ridiculously expensive as well, but they're it's not like your typical nylon bag that would say McGregor on it or something like that, right? this is different. This is a whole like this is kind of like the beefed up trinket market, right? That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't understand it. I it's like a single strap. It has like absolutely no structure whatsoever to it.
No structure whatsoever.
It just as someone who's passionately committed to walking, because it is one of the few forms of exercise we can regularly get right now, I can't imagine taking anything out that doesn't have a double strap on it. And that's just a starting point. Let's add on the fact that it has no stand to it. It has no structure. And typically the material, you can't take it in the mornings because that thing's going to be soaking wet, which means you're back's going to be soaking wet by the second hole.
Yeah, for sure. It will absolutely. I mean, and we've got ends of the spectrum, right? You've got, remember for a while you could buy like you bring a stick with you to lean your clubs in on the green, you know, so they didn't touch the ground.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of the Sunday bag. The Sunday bag is kind of like, you know, your clubs should never be on the ground in the same position that is as if you had gotten shot. That's my whole thing, right?
Oh man.
You're just thrown on the ground, and that you know, $400 high-end Sunday bag that's leather and everything is getting all dew all over it and whatever, and you can't carry anything. Nah, that's not for me. I'm not saying bring a Al Cervic bag, but the Sunday bag, it seems like when people like it though, they're just militant about it.
Yeah, what is the passion though? That's maybe someone out there who's listening has a genuine passion for their Sunday bag that they absolutely cannot wait to take it out there. But why would you want something that's so much less efficient? Is it like presentation? Is it because you love something that's genuinely handcrafted? Or is it just like a lifestyle choice? Is it like those
it's a lifestyle choice?
Is it like those Heelys? Like you don't want to run, you want to just slide down the street. So you buy these shoes with wheels in them. What's the, you know, where's the gap here that I don't understand?
So let me ask you a question about and relating to walking versus riding.
Okay.
If we've determined that single person in a cart is fastest, that's your opinion. Then number two is the walker. Did you clarify whether that was does it matter if they're carrying versus push cart?
I said push cart.
Push cart. Okay.
And I only say that because if you are, and I've experienced this numerous times, if you're lugging a bag, you're typically hunched over a little bit with your pace dictated. If you are pushing something, usually you're going to be a little bit more efficient because you're putting more energy into that push. Not to mention the way some of these things are built nowadays, I mean, they basically push themselves. So you can just wheel down the fairway with no problem. But yes, definitely pushing is second fastest.
Okay, so then I assume just carrying would be next because, right?
I gray areaed that one. I don't know. I think it depends the two guys because you're, The problem with saying that a two-person cart is next fastest is it is purely representative of both people in the cart, right? So even if I'm a fast golfer, if I'm not driving the cart, doesn't matter how fast I am. Doesn't matter how many times I walk across the fairway to hit my ball. I'm still dictated by how slow or fast they go as my partner, right?
There's a dependency there.
So whereas if I'm walking, and I do this quite a bit where I walk and other guys in my foursome are in carts, I get to places about the same time they do, but it's all dependent on what they do. So for example, if I outdrive all three of my playing partners, I'll be the last to hit into the green. So of course they'll be at the green first, but if I'm behind them, I hit first, I'm already prepped to start walking. It's a good chance I can be at that green by the time or before they get there. So it's all dependent on.
I think it's the walker is faster than I with the carrying their bag. I think because you don't have to wait. So let's go with that.
Okay.
My point is who's faster, the typical walker or the Sunday bag walker?
I would assume the Sunday bag guy, because I can't see anyone taking less than 14 with a bag like that and taking the game seriously. Wow, that was a very aggressive take, wasn't it?
Yeah, that could be. I don't know if they're gonna like.
Again, that's
bag guys are gonna like that.
At Canada and Golf on Twitter, come at me.
I would think that they're more purist and are gonna pull a club more like Lee Trevino. Pull his own club out of the bag and then hits the ball within 11 seconds, you know, that kind of stuff.
So you're saying the whole point of the Sunday bag is they don't want it to actually land on the ground. It's one move. They're pulling it out as it starts to fall. They've already hit the ball and they're picking it up before it lands.
That would be sweet.
That's like their speed.
If any Sunday bag trick shots, it's a niche. It's like a little niche market, but
hey, I'd watch that video. Sure.
That was, basically less time on the ground for the bag. Might be a valid argument, actually.
So I think we're both kind of stuck in a weird place here that we just have no real basic understanding as to why, what, or how. Maybe we need some advice here. Maybe someone can really lay into us the real logic around having a Sunday bag and what is so appealing about it.
Yeah, I wonder if they feel more relaxed when they have a Sunday bag, because it's like, you know what, I'm not even bringing all my clubs, therefore my expectations are a little lower. I got that pressure off me. I would think, like you were said, I'm not preparing for a tournament round, right? If I decide, because you know, if I was preparing for a tournament, I would want all my things. Like if you have a surgeon, I would ask him, do you use a Sunday bag when you golf? I want all the instruments on the table, man, for you to take care of me. I don't want you to just leave like scalpel 3 in the trunk.
It's like his afternoon surgery. He's got like a Sunday bag for his utensils with which to open you up. Is that what you're talking
about? Yeah. If we apply that to different things, it's kind of like going to the food store and getting a small cart. What's the point of that?
Oh, man.
What if you find a good deal during the during coronavirus time on toilet paper? You got to pick it up. Just get the big cart.
I don't know. I always thought that golfers were smart enough to just go straight to alcohol if they didn't want to take the round seriously.
That's a good point.
Is this like the alcohol-free version of being casual on a golf course?
Yeah, it's the straight edge. Sunday bag is like straight edge, man.
It's circular, dude, because once you get home, you have to have alcohol in you to pay $300-500 for a bag that looks like this, don't you?
Well, maybe you don't have money to buy alcohol because you bought this bag.
All right. I think I knew, but I don't know, Rob.
I don't know. I think I want a Sunday bag now.
Yeah? Is that to go with your egg burger?
It would look great in the den.
Yeah, a wall hanger, yeah. But can you buy a new bag for a wall hanger?
I don't see how that is. That's not efficient, that's for sure. That's not the best way to spend your money, I don't think.
It's a traditional look, but you're paying, I don't know. Rob, get us out of here, please.
It's like a real bag, but smaller. Sunday bags coming up. Well, we lost those sponsorship dollars.
Yep.
Good job. Solid all around, everybody. Next subject. I posted something. I was looking through pictures for my Name the Pro on Twitter thing, and I was looking at John Daly this morning, and he's so fascinating. Now, we all know about John Daly, but he's just so damn fascinating in how he burst on the scene. Nine, you know, what was he? Something alternate, third alternate or whatever it was. Ninth alternate. I forget what it was because I wasn't really paying attention way back when. Comes out of nowhere and wins the 91 PGA championship without a practice round. And probably doesn't have a Sunday bag, but probably wouldn't make a difference with Big John. His career has been obviously disappointing for the potential, but the man's got two majors, I think 18 wins that I saw, and just a homegrown swing. Doesn't care about the rules. If you look at the rule violations in the past, it's amazing. I can guarantee that he is a pro that has lost more balls in the water than anyone else on PGA Tour in PGA Tour history. Because if you read, he'll just bang him into the water. Like there was one, I forget what tournament, but he hit a 4-iron and didn't make it. It went in the water. I think it was at Pebble or something. So he took out a 6-iron and rinsed another two. Those were all his balls for the day and just left. Just left the grounds, like disqualified. Amazing. But when I was thinking about John, you have something to say?
Well, I was going to say, is it most balls for a pro or is it most balls and or clubs?
Yeah, it could be clubs too. I mean, that's happened plenty of time. Others have done it. But John's career is amazing and it obviously is different than most others. And then I was thinking like, wow, look at the potential that he had. He could have overpowered Augusta back in the day. He finished third in 93. I think that's the best he did at the Masters. Of course, he won the Open Championship as well in 95. But what do we have a better chance of seeing another John Daly on the PGA Tour again? A guy that is as far from technology, swing coaches, you know, track men and giving a crap about anything? Or do we have a better chance of seeing someone like Tiger Woods?
That's so hard. I think it has to be Daly for with the biggest reason being that Tiger was so impossible and how redefining he was for the game. Whereas Daly, he was like the trifecta of doesn't fit the mold. I mean, you take one look at his haircut and one look at him hitting balls off a beer can and you just know that, I mean, he's so mentally different. But we have guys like Boo Weekly, for example, who outside of making money on golf doesn't seem to care about the game. So that's like that side of it. But then you have guys like Bubba, who's exceptionally unorthodox in the way he swings. But, you know, he's a good, as far as I know, God-fearing, decent man. So can you really recreate that kind of trifecta of intensity when it comes out? And have that much success in the game and still be relevant on tour?
See, I look at it a little bit differently. I think you hit on all the proper points about it, but I don't think a John Daly now would ever get to that point that John Daly got to, because you would have an agent calling him up. You'd have a sports psychologist. You'd have this coach wanting to coach him, you know, a golf academy. Gosh, can you imagine a John Daly Golf Academy? I want that. I think that should be his next venture, because I think that would be like flipping awesome.
I'm assuming it would have a swim up bar.
Yeah, I don't think it would be much golf at all, but it would be a lot of fun to attend. So that's like the anti golf academy. I saw this. There was some show on the Fox or something this weekend, and it was like Nick Faldo's World of Golf or something, and it was instructional, and there was also an equipment section, and he has right up there Sir Nick Faldo, which I understand he's Sir Nick Faldo, but it just seems funny to always refer to yourself as Sir Nick Faldo. That's probably the complete opposite of John Daly, I would think. But I think you have a better chance of getting someone like Tiger, because you can argue that Rory is similar to Tiger in that way. I mean, he doesn't have the same recovery possibility. You know, that's what set Tiger winning with his B game over guys with their A game is what really set Tiger apart in his prime, I think. Because you could put a highlight reel of hundreds of Tiger shots that should not have happened from places that nobody should be. You know, it's ridiculous. And Rory's more like a machine. If he's on, boom, he's on, and he's gonna compete. But I don't think you'll ever get someone that gets through, quote unquote, the system the way John Daly did.
That is tough. You've created almost two impossible conditions. I like the Rory sample, but as you mentioned, he's human in a lot of ways, putting. His tendency to be up and down tournament to tournament. Obviously, he goes in his hot streaks, but he's never been truly, genuinely dominant. And whether that's one thing or another that holds him back, so be it. What made Tiger so remarkable was nothing held him back. No matter how erratic he got off the tee, there was a solution on every iron shot he hit. You know, no matter how many times he missed a green, there was an impossible wedge shot. You can go to YouTube right now and get 100 of them where you got guys like Jack Nicklaus, and he'll be lucky to make bogey here, and he chips in for birdie or par or whatever it is.
Yeah, something ridiculous like that, right?
So I think our chances of seeing someone like that is next to none. And because power has been harnessed so aggressively by these younger, incredible athletes, you have guys like Matt Wolf who come out and show Rory and DJ, two of the longest hitters of our decade, or this past decade, that, I mean, there are plenty of young guys who can do it just as well. You've got web.com or Korn Ferry, where the driving numbers are almost impossible with all these young guys just blasting the ball. Tiger's dominance was redefining the game, right? That he had power for days. He was hitting shots into greens that no one had ever seen before. I just don't know that we have a whole nother echelon of distance to get on, to get to Tiger's level. Whereas Daly, I mean, yeah, he was incredible in a lot of ways, but is there a chance that someone can just IDGAF right out on tour like no big deal, and suddenly it's a gong show basically between him and winning tournaments versus chugging beers or whatever he is mostly defined for?
Yeah, I agree. I still think you could get someone like Tiger. I'm not saying they're going to win 15 majors, maybe more, whatever, in 82 tournaments. I mean, but we never thought we would get, you know, after, you know, you never thought anyone would beat, you know, Kareem or Magic or Bird and Jordan and LeBron. You know, people come along in different sports, and I know I'm just naming basketball, but it is definitely, it's tougher in golf, arguably, to win majors. I still think Jack is the best of all time. I don't know. That's a debate for another day. But I think there are people, there are a lot more people that have been in that Tiger path, you know, because if you go down that elite company that has, you know, so many tour wins and a bunch of majors, what is it, over six? There's only a handful that have over that. You're more likely to get that scenario, though, than to actually get this homegrown talent like John Daly to burst through on the PGA Tour and actually come away with a couple of majors.
So are you saying the inability to be hidden under the radar to the point where you would not be conditioned is just, it's unrealistic nowadays?
Yeah, I totally think that's unrealistic. That would, some, you know, you would, everything is so connected and so controlled now. Even with little leaguers, you know, and things like that, I didn't go to little league camp. I mean, I'm not in the major leagues, so maybe there's a correlation there. But that happens, and there's a lot more structure throughout your life now, especially as an athlete. I mean, you have coaches for everything. I mean, we have not only swing coach, but short game coach, and your mental coach, and your conditioning coach. You know, there's so much that's involved. I don't think anybody like that would ever get through the system. You would ever see someone like that again.
It's kind of a bummer that you present it that way, because I don't think you're wrong in a lot of ways, but it's also incredibly disappointing, because watching John Daly play the game is entertaining. You don't know what you're going to get. You hope for the best, expect something ridiculous, and whatever comes of it comes of it. Like, that's kind of exciting to be a part of.
Oh, absolutely. There's a chance of things going off course. You know, it's someone with personality. It's not like as good a player, a fantastic player he was. It's not like, you know, watching Retief Goosen get around or something like that, right? It's just not as compelling as good as the golf might be.
So what I was going to add on to that was, we have a ton of guys on tour right now who are quirky, and maybe this inability to self-define and more refined based on the system has eliminated some of the crazy we could get out of guys like Bryson, for example, or I mean, even DJ or Brooks, Koepka. These guys all have these like little things about them that you're like, huh, I don't know if I like that. I don't know if I hate it. I don't know if I should cheer for it. But no one as incredibly unique as Daly. And
yeah, who's the opposite but has a little bit of quirks? Like, is Patrick Reed like that, but the opposite, in that he's the villain? You know, he's the heel, where Daly's like always going to be the face.
I don't know. Did Daly ever? Because I feel like those are two different stories, right? Daly's just Daly. Reed is
But it's interesting. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
You know, when it pops up, the conversation is definitely interesting.
Huh. Do you think that golf is more in a broader spectrum nowadays? I mean, if someone, let me preface that. If someone came out, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago and started wearing joggers on tour, you know, dressing the way some of these guys do now, acting the way some of them do now, would it be perceived similar to how Daly was, where it just wasn't the norm? It wasn't pleated khakis and quiet?
Well, you know, joggers are more athletic. And if you look at the stuff that was worn in the past, I mean, that whole era, and there was a thread on THP about this, right? Like, what's changed over the last 20 years. And you look at the fashion difference. It's not even just fashion. It's materials. It's fit and things like that. Everything was just super oversized and baggy, right? For some reason, I don't know why that happened. But I was even watching like an NHL replay from 97, because that's where we are in sports, folks, at this point, right?
Yeah.
And their sweaters, their jerseys were huge. It was like Rangers Flyers, and you could see their pads underneath, you know, like sticking out and things like that. Everything has changed as fabrics have changed and things like that as well. But I don't think someone wearing joggers it's not nearly as jarring, because whatever Daly's wearing, his personality and behavior and so forth, and, you know, sucking on a heater while he's hitting a shot with the ball in the line, he, you know, he's different than everybody else. So that always makes him interesting. Yet Reed, like you're saying, that's a different animal. Completely
different. I guess that begs the question, who would you rather see? Someone with the potential of a Tiger, or someone with the potential of a Daly?
Oh, boy, that's a good question.
Because you're basically looking at two things, right? You're forcing the tour to be more successful based on just pure ratings perspective with what Tiger did. You're forcing the guys on tour to get better because of how Tiger pushed them. But then you're also removing some of what could be considered bland out of our tour right now. You force a different perspective, which could bring on more fans, more of an interesting profile to the game, especially with success.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple ways you can take that. If there's someone that's coming along that's on the quote unquote Tiger path, you're such a Tiger fan, you don't want to see it, you know, though it seems like everybody has embraced Rory that way, right? I mean, but Rory hits his driver so damn well. It doesn't matter what brand, he just destroys that thing. that he doesn't have that that need to do those recovery shots when he's on. You know, it's just a machine, and it's wonderful. But I think if you look at Tiger, one of the things that really stands out is his creativity, and he has a set of hands like nobody else. It's just so powerful, and he's rare in that respect. You know, he's a very, I tend to root for the more creative person, because I remember when Hovland and Wolf were coming out, I was thinking to myself, well, that Wolf swing, that's never going to last. There's no way that thing is going to, that there's no way you can bulletproof that thing. And now as I watch him, even though everything was right, like in the first, you know, five holes of the match last week, I enjoy watching that guy more than just your typical robotic swing person.
So let me rephrase the question before we wrap up for the week. Assuming one of each kind will happen in golf in the next decade, when do you want each of them to occur? When do you think golf's ready for it?
For
the next Tiger and the next Daly.
There will be someone that is the next Tiger. At least there'll be some sort of comparison. Now, it'll take a few majors in order to do it, but someone will say, oh, they've been playing golf since they were two, blah, 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 this and that. You'll get that.
So when do you think is best for golf for one of each to show up in the game?
I think that a Daly type would be awesome immediately. It's easier to throw someone out there with personality, right? That all of a sudden can play. But like I said, I don't know if that'll actually happen. I don't know if there's a right answer as far as when the next Tiger should come along, but it'd be nice if this up and comer was was while Tiger was still playing the tour. That'd be pretty cool.
Little sunset action. I think I look back at Tiger's 97 win at the Masters, talking about Jack finishing up and handing off the torch.
Yeah,
it makes me think that later is better than sooner, to give golfers a chance to really say farewell to Tiger in a way that is on both terms, instead of Tiger's crazy escapade.
You mean Escalade?
Escapade. Oh God. Yeah. Escalade. You know, a little 9-iron here, 9-iron. It's fine. Anyways, I think it'd be nice for us to all see the torch passed at a later time. I think he's still got a bit in the tank, and I'd love to see it occur before we really focus our eyes on one singular person. And in the meantime, enjoy the serious amount of talent that the tour currently possesses.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like you said, even on the Korn Ferry tour. Oh, we said Korn Ferry twice on this one.
KF.
You've got everyone hits the ball so far. There's no, we're not going to be saying the conversation like, who do you think's the next Fred Funk? You know, coming up. No offense to Freddie. Love Fred Funk.
Well, I got to say, Rob, 48 minutes later, it's been another good one. Episode 6 is in pretty much done.
Yeah, in the books, head to the scorer's tent.
Sign your card.
Sign the card and wrap it up. Everyone have fun watching the match number 2 on Sunday.
Or golfing.
Or both. Another 4 o'clock tea time. 4:30. Yeah.
That's the world we live in, man. I'll book when I can. I play when I can.
Just go out early. Get done.
Hey, if there were tea times, I'd do it. But also stay tuned for a Golf Unfiltered podcast, I believe released on Monday, which will have both Rob and I in a less cordial manner debating unfortunate things that I wish never happened, but it's recorded and it's out there. So
it's well worth it.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. And Adam stuck with us throughout and didn't cut us off too many times. Thank goodness, because I think some things that needed to be said were said. What do you think, Rob?
I, I tried so hard on that podcast to save your guys' lives. I just hope you pay attention to my advice.
Anyways, thank you so much for being a part of this great off-course experience. Again, episode 6 in the books. My name is Dan Edwards, aka Canadan Golf on Twitter. I'm with Rob Miller here at Rob Miller Time. And we do have our socials, Off Course THP, on both Twitter and Instagram. We'll see you guys next week.
Adios.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.